Alaskans, by standing up, you are bringing the new life of spring to victims and survivors who have been gripped by this winter for too long.
Governor Parnell leads a rally against domestic violence. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, March 29th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Sitkin residents protest the Coast Guard's commander in Alaska over his action in the Lance Leone case.
Why, after two boards have told him there's nothing there, give Lance his wings back, his commander here has told him to give back his wings?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Grant Station, your fast track to funding, helping identify appropriate grant makers for your organization's programs and projects. On the web at grantstation.com. The Association of Alaska School Boards promotes one-to-one digital learning for all Alaska students to prepare them for success in the global economy. More information at aasb.org. This message sponsored by the Association of Alaska School Boards.
The House today set a priority for state funding: transportation. Members voted to ask Alaskans to approve a constitutional amendment that would set up a dedicated fund that could only be used to pay for transportation projects, even if state revenue falls. Sponsor Peggy Wilson, a Republican from Wrangell, said the state faces problems paying for its transportation infrastructure, both from state revenue and from expected cuts in federal assistance.
The state really needs a reliable revenue stream that doesn't fluctuate from year to year. With a dedicated fund, Alaska can implement a transportation plan that is independent from the federal government.
Wilson's plan would hold all state income from sources such as license plate fees, taxes, motor fuel taxes, in addition to any money the legislature wants to add. It could only be used for transportation and related expenses. Anchorage Democrat Les Guerra said the protection for transportation spending would have an effect on other needs at any given time. He estimated if education had an equal priority, a special fund would need $22 billion to guarantee meeting its expenses. A public safety endowment would require protecting $4 billion. The university would need an $18 billion fund.
By the time we took the most popular priorities and said, let's have a fund for each one of those, there's no money to address the things that don't get the public attention that we need, like energy projects, like revenue sharing so we can help communities fund their local needs, like children's services, like heating assistance for communities that have very, very high heating costs.
Guerra said the state would be better served if the legislature continued to prioritize spending needs every year based on available revenue. The resolution will be available for a final reconsideration vote tomorrow before it is sent to the Senate for consideration. Governor Sean Parnell was in Fairbanks this afternoon as part of his Choose Respect campaign to raise awareness about domestic violence and sexual abuse in Alaska. This is the third year for the campaign. Similar events are happening this week across the state. KUAC's Emily Schwing has more.
What do we want to end?
Power and control!
What do we want to begin?
Choose Respect!
As warm sunshine melted snow on the Golden Heart Plaza in downtown Fairbanks, nearly 100 people gathered to hear the governor speak. He compared Alaska's rampant problems with domestic violence to the long, cold winter most of the state has endured.
Like many places in Alaska, winter's been severe here, hasn't it? You guys ready for it to be over?
Yes!
And Alaskans, by standing up, you are bringing the new life of spring to victims and survivors who have been gripped by this winter for too long.
Fairbanks resident and Ruby native Elaine Pitko was in the audience.
My daughter was murdered 1 year ago, and it escalated from a lot of domestic violence, and this is how it ended.
Pitko hopes the governor's message reaches younger generations in the state.
If we can get it through to the ones coming up now, that it's definitely way off bounds, way off bounds. If it's not stopped, that it should have consequences. It's monumental because it's the more I'm hearing and knowing, the more families this has been going on.
When the Choose Respect campaign started in 2010, 18 communities across the state signed on. But this week, 123 cities and villages in Alaska will participate in rallies, marches, and get-togethers. The governor says he'll continue to help grow the effort.
I've pledged to put 15 new VPSOs, Village Public Safety Officers, every year into the villages that have none, and the necessary trooper support behind them for that. On the support services side, we're funding shelters and support services there.
The governor called Fairbanks the gateway to Alaska's rural communities. Shortly after the rally, he took off for the village of Huslia, saying he wants his message to reach beyond the state's urban centers. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
Save the post office. That was the rally cry in downtown Douglas yesterday, as a crowd of about 100 urged Congress to pass legislation to keep open the community's post office. The Douglas station is one of more than 3,600 post offices nationwide being considered for closure by the financially strapped United States Postal Service. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Oh, yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
A flatbed truck served as a makeshift stage at the noontime rally. Organizer Suzanne Williams stepped to the microphone and urged residents to contact Alaska's congressional delegation, especially Senator Mark Begich.
He is on the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee, which oversees the U.S. Postal Service. He's the critical one. You need to contact him this week.
Williams even handed out pre-printed postcards. Sally Smith with Begich's Juneau office said Congress is unlikely to act on Postal Service budget relief legislation until after the Easter holiday, giving residents more time to send in their comments. Smith says Begich is working hard to keep all Alaska post offices open.
We don't have promises, but we have hope. And you're helping to reinforce that hope by being here. The postcards that you send, when you send them to my office, they will go into the scanner. They will get to DC as quickly as we can process them in the office. I'm sorry, guys, they won't go by mail.
The Postal Service's financial problems have been well documented, ranging from the economy to the internet to a 2006 congressional mandate requiring the Postal Service to pre-fund retirement benefits. USPS Alaska Region spokesman Ernie Swanson says the agency has proposed several solutions to the budget shortfall, including discontinuing Saturday delivery and removing the requirement to pre-fund retirement.
But to this point, Congress has not done anything to grant us any of that, so it's still sitting there waiting to be decided upon.
Congress did ask USPS for a moratorium on post office closures through May 15th. Swanson says no decision has been made on any of the more than 3,600 locations nationwide being considered for closure. And while the agency is done taking comment, it does take note of demonstrations like the one in support of the Douglas Post Office.
We don't ignore things like that. We're interested in what the community thinks and how strongly they feel about their postal situation. So that will have a bearing, but I can't put a number on it as to how much of an impact it would have.
Pat Peterson thinks it would be a mistake for the Postal Service to close the Douglas Post Office. The owner of the Douglas Inn Bar and president of the Douglas 4th of July Committee has lived in the community all his life.
Got my post office box in 1975. It's been through two divorces. It's the only thing that my ex-wives didn't get.
Seriously, Peterson says the post office is vital to the Douglas community.
They take good care of us, and if I have something and I haven't picked it up, they'll call me up and say, hey, come down and get your mail. So the service is real personable, and they're just good people to know.
The rally ended up at the post office, where Juneau Mayor Bruce Botello, who lives in Douglas, presented postal clerks Lee Kearney and Dean Ruby with certificates of appreciation to thunderous applause.
You're the personification of the best of the service.
Thank you.
Kearney was visibly moved by the tribute.
My great-grandparents are buried over here, and this community is just really something else.
Postmaster General Patrick Donahoe will make the final decision on which post offices to close. He'll consider input from the Alaska District Office, which held a public meeting in Douglas last September. Four other post offices in the state are on the list for possible closure. The Anchorage Postal Store and postal stations at Elmendorf and Eielson Air Force Bases and Fort Wainwright. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, citizen science helps track orca populations.
In their own home range, they're very vocal. I mean, it's like a cocktail party going on. It's just multiple conversations going on between whales all the time.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
You can find APRN headlines from around the state online at alaskapublic.org. There you'll discover local and worldwide news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. alaskapublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
A federal judge has ordered representatives of Greenpeace USA to stay a kilometer away from Shell Oil's drilling vessels destined for Arctic Ocean waters off Alaska's northern shores. The 29-page order signed Wednesday by Judge Sharon Gleason in Anchorage grants a preliminary injunction requested by Shell through October 31st, the end of the open water drilling season. A 500-meter safety zone is in place for support vessels. Shell sought the injunction after Greenpeace New Zealand activists in February boarded the Shell drill ship Noble Discoverer before it left for the U.S. West Coast for cold weather modifications. The activists were arrested. The Coast Guard's commander in Alaska took a side door out of Sitka's airport on Wednesday, avoiding protesters who oppose his decision about the future of a Sitka-based aviator. Rear Admiral Thomas Ostebo came to Sitka to meet with Coast Guardsmen from around the state about the aftermath of a 2010 helicopter crash. Three people from Air Station Sitka died in that crash. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
The 10 or so people held signs in the lobby of Sitka's Rocky Gutierrez Airport. One of the signs had the name Ostebo on it, crossed out with a circle and slash. Another said, "We support the USCG, unlike you." The group was hoping to get the attention of Rear Admiral Thomas Ostebo, the commander of the Coast Guard in Alaska, and one of the passengers on the morning jet. They said they are upset Ostebo pursued disciplinary action against Lieutenant Lance Leone. Leone faced criminal charges in the crash of Coast Guard helicopter 6017, which went down in July 2010 off the coast of Washington State. The criminal charges were dismissed, but Leone's attorneys say remarks Ostebo made on Leone's service record jeopardize his chances of ever getting back in a cockpit. The group picketing in the airport might have attracted Ostebo's attention, but they did not get any of his time. In the parking lot afterward, protest organizer Mike Finn said if he had been able to talk to Ostebo, he would have asked him why he disciplined Leone.
Why, after two boards have told him there's nothing there, give Lance his wings back. His commander here has told us to him to give back his wings, put him in the air. He's a qualified pilot. You don't come to Alaska not being qualified. The very best pilots come up here, and he has just chosen to take this mission on by himself and to follow what he believes is right.
Finn says Leone had nothing to do with organizing the protest.
This is our own group. This is how we feel about Ostebo. Anything we've done on anything has nothing to do with Lance. Lance is not involved with this at all. I know that this is the feeling throughout the entire Coast Guard, so I'm happy to represent that.
Leone's private attorney, John Smith, is planning a challenge to Ostebo's remarks on his client's service record. Smith says evidence brought out during the criminal proceedings against Leone exonerates him of any blame in the crash. In a strongly worded commentary distributed to both the Daily Sitka Sentinel and KCAW, Smith invoked the anti-communism hearings held by Senator Joseph McCarthy in the 1950s. Here's Smith reading from his commentary.
It is important to ask Admiral Ostebo and the Coast Guard senior leadership the same question lawyer Joseph Welch asked Senator Joe McCarthy during the famous Army-McCarthy hearings in 1954. Have you no sense of decency?
Smith says both Ostebo and the Coast Guard's report on the accident ignore evidence demonstrating Leone's innocence. That includes the wires the helicopter clipped to cause the crash. The report does mention them and says that they should have been better marked, but it says it's speculative as to whether that would have prevented the crash. Smith says the Coast Guard was negligent in not marking them properly. The Coast Guard's report is called the Final Action Memo, or FAM for short.
Admiral Ostabo, in briefing the Coast Guard's FAM, does not merely follow McCarthy's precedent of half-truths. He will commit a far more serious blow to the truth. He will disregard evidence demonstrating Lieutenant Leone's innocence and therefore purposefully shield Coast Guard leadership from accountability for egregious lapses of safety concerns.
KCAW requested an interview with Ostabo through the district office in Juneau. A Coast Guard spokesman said the admiral had a tight schedule and would be returning immediately to Juneau without time for interviews. The Coast Guard would not say how long Ostabo is in town, citing security procedures. Ostabo's meeting at Air Station Sitka was not open to the public. Only authorized personnel were allowed onto air station property on Wednesday. The main gate was closed, and IDs were being checked as cars pulled up. Typically, the public has access to both the air station grounds and the beach beyond. Chief Petty Officer Kip Wadlow is a spokesman for the Coast Guard in Alaska. He says Ostabo was directed by the Coast Guard's vice commandant in Washington, D.C., to hold the briefing in Sitka.
The Coast Guard has a tradition of very close ties with the communities that we serve in. And when incidents and accidents happen, there are a lot of emotions involved. The reason why the Coast Guard takes things like this so seriously is because we value our people.
Wednesday's meeting included aviators from Sitka, Kodiak, and other parts of the United States. Wadlow says Ostabo went over the final action memo and the steps the Coast Guard plans to take in order to prevent future accidents. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
A portion of the Copper River Highway is expected to be closed for several more years. The Alaska Department of Transportation announced yesterday that one of the highway's 11 bridges will remain closed until it's replaced. KCHU's Tony Gorman has more.
DOT and the U.S. Geological Survey began monitoring Bridge 339 at 36.5 mile on the Copper River Highway back in 2009.
We started to notice that there was extensive scouring, which is essentially erosion, going on around Bridge 339. We started to become, concerned about the structural integrity and what that scour would do.
The scour got worse when the water volume increased. That forced DOT to close access to the bridge last summer. DOT Public Information Officer Meadow Bailey says, after more on-site inspections, DOT decided to close the bridge indefinitely.
We're not positive that the bridge will even last through breakup. It might be that the bridge washes out. And so we don't want people on it.
Bailey says recreational activities have been affected by the closure.
There's also a very nice campground there that has been impacted because people can't access it right now. And there's a lodge back there. There's some float tours and things like that.
A plan to replace the 35-year-old bridge is in the works. The estimated cost of the project is $29 million. Last fall, DOT received $2 million to begin the design phase. Bailey says the phase is expected to last through 2013.
We're working on kind of a preliminary design. We'll do field work this summer and to look at designing a new bridge that will be able to handle the, it'll be a longer, larger bridge that would be able to handle the volume of water.
DOT hopes to get agency permitting by 2014 and begin construction on the replacement bridge as early as 2015. Officials are heading to Cordova next week to further discuss the closure with residents. Reporting from Valdez, I'm Tony Gorman.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Join business, civic, and government leaders from across Alaska and the nation at the 2012 Business of Clean Energy in Alaska Conference, April 19th and 20th at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage. Clean energy is a $250 billion a year business worldwide, and Alaska has the potential to be a world leader in this growing field. Information at bceaconference.com or 929-7770. This message sponsored by REAP.
For UAA students looking towards spring graduation, the importance of final grades is starting to fade as a new project deadline approaches, getting a job. Some students took the impending graduation date seriously and organized a resume workshop. Local business professionals and human resource managers were on hand to offer free advice. APRN's Heather Arono, not far from graduating herself, attended the workshop and has this story.
In the Lila Richards Conference Room in the UAA Student Union, quiet but animated conversations are taking place all over the room. 15 business representatives sit across from soon-to-be graduates, discussing fonts, word choices, and the strategic use of bullet points. 23-year-old Evelyn Castillo is a marketing major with a minor in journalism and public communications. She says she's looking for a job in marketing.
I'm interning now in public relations or in corporate communications with Alaska Communications, and it's been a great experience, and I'm going to intern in the summer in a marketing position. So far, I really want to go full-time into marketing, but we'll see after the summer how much, if I like it as much as I like PR.
Castillo helped organize the event. Business representatives volunteered their time to help over 50 students improve their resumes. She says UAA does a good job of educating students, but should put more emphasis on building networks while in college.
They don't really encourage like networking opportunities. There's amazing networks here that I'm a part of, and when I go to the luncheons, which is something I got used to doing because of being in this other school, that they kind of put it in our heads that it's a great networking thing. It's kind of weird to me when I'm the only student there.
Megan Metcalf, 25 years old, will graduate in December. She's a strategic communications major and is currently serving as an intern at a local ad agency. Metcalf says she was glad to get some tips on her resume, but she agrees with Castillo that more guidance should be given to students who are looking for industry connections.
It's not the easiest thing for students to get in contact with professionals, I think. And if it came from a professor or the relationships, like I said, were already established, it might be a little bit easier for students to get their foot in the door.
Fred Millen is the HR director for Alyeska Pipeline. He says he's happy to be able to give back to the community by giving out advice to students, especially since he didn't have the same opportunity when he was a new college graduate. The biggest tips Millen has for graduates entering the job market are surprisingly traditional. Cover letters are key.
It's important to an employer to know a little bit about the person, to know that they can write well, so they present themselves well. A cover letter that would show that they've done a little bit of research about my company, that they're not just sending out mass resumes or applications.
He also recommends job hunters send out thank you notes to their interviewers. UAA's Career Services Center offers free career advice to students and members of the community. Office manager Natalie Elder also helped organize the workshop, and she is hopeful students getting advice will walk away with a little more confidence.
I mean, confidence is one of the biggest things that they need to be entering the workforce. So confidence and just a better resume, I mean, that's what the whole point is for this workshop.
As for me, that looming graduation brings with it both excitement and worry. The uncertainty of economic shifts can make the world seem like a scary place for an undergrad. But if more efforts like this workshop are made available, I think I'll have a better chance at success. In Anchorage, I'm Heather Arono.
A Northwest Whale Sighting Network is looking to enlist more participants from Southeast Alaska. The Orca Network's Howard Garrett is one of the featured speakers at this year's Whale Fest in Craig. Deanna Garrison sat down with Garrett during a brief visit to Ketchikan yesterday and has the story.
Garrett says the Orca Network is a large group of volunteers who help track killer whales in the Northwest.
And then we relay that information to a whole network of scientists, every researcher, Canadian, U.S., government, nonprofit, independent, or just, you know, excited enthusiast who wants to know how the whales are doing, what the news is, if there's any new babies, any losses, any issues that they need to know about. We sort of distribute that information.
Garrett says scientists can use the information provided by volunteers to track the movements of orcas throughout the Northwest and California. He says the whales look similar to an untrained eye, but that each orca has a distinguishing feature.
If you get up close or get a good photo of that dorsal fin, and then behind the dorsal on the back is what's called a saddle patch. It's where you'd put a saddle if you were going to ride an orca, but it's a little gray area. And a good photo can show individual distinctions so that even though there are, you know, a couple thousand up and down the coast from California to the Bering Sea, each one is unique.
Garrett says Southeast Alaska has a resident population of orcas of around 300 that he says is in very good shape. Garrett says a separate population of killer whales that straddles the border between British Columbia and Washington state has experienced a 25% drop in its population. He says that community of orcas was listed as an endangered species. He says the dramatic decline of killer whales in that area has resulted in more research and greater interest in the movements of killer whales. Garrett says researchers only just recently learned that orcas from Washington state make their way as far north as Southeast Alaska.
And that's the news that we only found out 3 weeks ago, is that there's some fishermen in Chatham Strait found some photographs from June 1st of 2007 that showed our whales from Washington. So that extended their range about 300 miles. So before that, we knew that they came up to the Queen Charlotte's, to Haida Gwaii, but that was the northern limit until 3 weeks ago. And now we know that at least, you know, 5 years ago, they were up there. So they probably come up more often than we know.
Garrett says it's not clear if the orcas have always traveled to Southeast Alaska or if they are expanding their range. He says researchers only learned in 2007 that killer whales from the Northwest made their way as far south as California. Garrett says each population of orcas stay within their extended families for life. He says they don't recruit or mate outside of their community. When visiting outside of their natural territory, he says they adjust their behavior.
When they're in an area that is the usual habitat of another community, they tend to be very quiet. Because otherwise, in their own home range, they're very vocal. I mean, it's like a cocktail party going on. It's just multiple conversations going on between whales all the time. You can listen in, and it's just so exciting to hear all these different calls going.
He says each community has its own completely separate vocabulary.
It's not like there is an orca moo or roar or anything. Each community learns their own, you know, vocabulary of calls. So you can identify them without even seeing them if you have the calls.
Garrett says although orcas can eat just about anything in the ocean, their diet is almost exclusively made up of king salmon and chum. He says an adult orca can eat 250 to 300 pounds of Chinook a day. In Ketchikan, I'm Deanna Garrison.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, Casey Kelly in Juneau, Ed Ronco in Sitka, Tony Gorman in Valdez, and Deanna Garrison in Ketchikan. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau and Heather Orono in Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Kristen Spack. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
And by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.